you see him in his car, they film him from the car, and he's in the car, he gets out, takes his shirt off, walks straight into a fight. There's no glitz, no glamour. They walk into a backyard, they walk into a car park, they go to under the bridge.
Deliveroo USC. Welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the worst things in life. I'm Barry McStay, and each week I, my co-host, and our guest propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. Philip Larkin wrote, "They fuck you up, your mum and dad. They may not mean to, but they do." Larkin's parents sound like ideal candidates for this podcast. It takes a unique set of unskills to transform your child into a jazz-loving, pornography-collecting librarian poet. The sort of parents for whom breastfeeding meant shoving bits of chicken down Phil's throat, their sex talk involved graphic sexual mimes with teddy bears, and who probably told their son that Santa didn't exist, he was merely a metaphor for materialism. And literally sitting beside me, as smiley as a simile, is the metaphorical Ben Vanderveld. Hi, Ben.
Hey, Barry. I mean, firstly, you called my very existence into question, which is a difficult thing to deal with on a Thursday morning.
I don't think I've given it meaning. I mean, stand for something.
In our friendship, yes. In that introduction, no. Also, considering what this week's subject is going to be, I'm astonished that you've opened the podcast with Philip Larkin.
Yeah, I thought I'd go high ground before we really go low.
That's unfair. Like, I'm just going to mention it now. We're going to talk about the world's worst MMA fighter, mixed martial arts fighter. First two things. One, not lowbrow. It is human chess.
Oh, hey, hey, Philip Larkin had a magnificent naked rear choke hold.
Like, what he did in the erotic aisle of the library is down to him and him alone.
I like the idea that Hull was named the City of Culture basically because of Larkin. That's it.
Is that all they've got?
Well, they've got Hull Truck Theatre, but if it was basically the one, yeah, we had Larkin, that was kind of it.
They've got a marina.
It's good.
They've got one nice comedy club.
You've been, how did you go down in Hull?
I went down pretty well in Hull. Yeah.
That shows how high culture.
Right, this podcast turns into a free-form MMA fight between me and Barry, desperately scrapping around against each other, we should introduce our guest. Our guest is Brian Lacey. He is a comedian, podcaster, commentator, and semi-pro MMA fighter.
We're all semi-pro MMA fighters.
he is soon to appear on the TV show Wimp to Warrior, which manages to turn a sallow-eyed, slobby-bellied human into a lean, mean fighting machine. And through that, he has also ended up commentating for ACB, one of the top mixed martial arts franchises in the world, which, as we were talking about before, Brian, has taken you to some fucking terrifying parts of the globe.
It's ridiculous. So ACB stands for Absolute Championship, which is a Russian promotion, so I got approached to go and spend basically one weekend, 4 or 5 days a month in Russia, and I was thinking Moscow, St. Petersburg, a bit of culture, go and see the Red Square. Yeah. They sent me to a place called Penza, which is basically, if you could picture 1950s Birmingham, when they're trying to build it and make it into a classy centre.
Yeah.
They've modelled their entire city on that, and they got halfway through building it and just thought, we'll leave it there.
Scaffolding still
up. It's just the most horrific. They may openly say it themselves. But in other places I've been in Russia, I've been able to go out for runs or just have a wander around the city centre. Got to this place in Penza, was walking out, and the receptionist said, You go out for a run? I said, yeah. So you go with anybody else? I said, no. She said, are you wearing those Nike trainers? I said, yeah. She said, you're not going for a run.
Oh, man. That's it. The muggers are so good, they can rip shoes off as you run past.
They'll just cut your legs off. Amazing. So, no, but it's the nuts experience. I've been to, like, Krasnodar, Rostov-on-Don, St. Petersburg, Moscow. And it's just a really great, it's such a huge landmass. It's twice the size. Like landmass-wise, just under twice the size of America as a part of this planet, and it's got all shapes and sizes. It's like traveling back. It's like going back to the future, 1980s. There's lots of mullets, and a huge amount of sexism. So
And lots of fighting.
Lots of fighting, that's what they're built on. That we do football. We like with Sunday league football, and with kids, we grow up with them, the ball around the park.
Yeah.
What they do, what they send their young men into is combat wrestling. So it's sambo, wrestling, jiu-jitsu, freestyle wrestling, Greco-Roman wrestling. So by the age of some of the fighters I've spoken to or commentated on or been around, by the age of 23, 24, they've had up to maybe 200 fights.
Wow!
200. And
by 23, 24?
By 23, 24 years old. There's one fighter who is on the next card that we're commentating on next week. And he's called Tibolov, Ibrahim Tibolov, and he's such a nice, calm, gentle fella. And that's how he got into... I got into fighting, and he said, my friends fought, what do you mean? And he said, they came to see me in my city, they spent some time with me, and then one night they took me out, and what they didn't tell me is they'd taken me to a bare knuckle fighting tournament, and they'd entered me without telling me.
Like going to a karaoke bar.
That's our thing. We were like, you'd go, you know, you'd be sitting there having a drink with your mates, you go, it's raining men, Brian, Lacey, how are you? He was sat having a drink, we weren't having a drink, he's a Muslim, so that's not his most, but he was out there watching the fights, and then his name got called, and he literally had to step in there, and he said he loved it so much, he won the fight, he said he won it in under 5 minutes, he won the fight, and from that moment onwards, he knew he wanted to, this is what he wanted to do.
In the world.
Do you know what? And I thought, I don't want to set the scene, break the image of us sat in a beautiful studio right now, but the thing I am genuinely worst at is spelling, and you have balanced your wonderfully phallic microphone in front of us on three dictionaries right in front of me. So it's as if you knew that this is a bit spelling. I'm terrible, my handwriting's terrible, my grammar's terrible, and my spelling is atrocious.
So in the same way that when I'm watching MMA and going, fucking hell, I couldn't do that, if you watch a spelling bee, you're like, those little ninja kids.
Yeah, that's right, exactly.
Hand down. So, as we've already explained, this week we're talking about the world's worst mixed martial artist, as Brian is an expert in the area. So we're going to start with the non-expert, Ben. What have you discovered in your research?
Right, well, it's actually taken me back down memory lane, because I remember watching some of the original UFC fights, or even before UFC was a thing, because back in the day, it was, right, let's get a 5'3" Brazilian jiu-jitsu fighter to take on a sumo wrestler. Mm. And they were joyous. They were so much fun to watch. And you get to one of my favourites, and I couldn't find any records of him. There was this old boxer who, like, he had no ground game. He couldn't really do anything other than he had an amazing hook. And he managed to get all the way to a final of a tournament just by holding on and holding on and holding on, and after about 15 minutes, knocking a guy out.
And then he went one clean punch.
That's all he needed. And then he went one-on-one with one of the Gracie family, and they were like, I don't think so, my friend.
Good night.
Good night, yes.
Yeah, the Gracies they're all over mixed martial arts. You don't go online and you do any research with it. Just there's billions of them.
Yeah,
so
it's because of them. Basically, one of the greats and a guy called Art Davies came up with the actual concept. So they decided, and the reason they did it was the Gracie had a thing called the Gracie Challenge.
Yeah.
So,
and this is back to the start.
It's not back to the start of the 20th century. We're talking probably mid-1940s, 50s. They had, one of the Gracies came up with the fighting system, which is ground-based, where a small man would be able to take on a larger man. Mm. So, and then they challenged people to prove that their martial art was indeed the most effective, which is exactly the reason they came up with this UFC, the Ultimate Fighting Championship, to pit each martial art against each other, each body type, each size, no weight classes, very few rules back in those days, no eye gouging and no biting.
Lot of dick punching.
You say it, there's people getting caught up, and literally they are just wailing on each other's balls. Which is a sentence I wasn't
expecting. I might have even mentioned it on an earlier podcast, but one in particular where there's, I think he's a Korean guy, just getting thumped in the testicles and taking it.
Yeah,
that's the most incredible thing. He doesn't submit.
No, I'm having it.
You know where boxes or anything like that.
They didn't in those days, but they're now developed. The sports and the equipment, yeah, you need a cup.
Yeah.
You need a cup. Oh my god, you need
a
cup.
Got a suit of armour. Yeah. I'm sensitive in many other places as well.
I would love to see someone come out in just a pair of briefs going up against a knight in full Crusader armour.
We've seen that there's actually a knight fighting championship.
Yes!
Now. So there is, so they've expanded this, so they've now got a knight fighting championship. So there's some crazy sports out there. There's X-Arm, which is mixed martial arts and arm wrestling. They tie each other's hands, it's created by the same guy that created the UFC.
Wow.
Tie each other's hands together, and then the idea that you beat them in an arm wrestle or you knock the opponent out and make them submit.
Wow.
Tied together, so that's brutal. And then the next evolution from that, somebody had the thought exactly like you, but let's forget the cup, let's wrap each other up in whatever we can, get some maces, a broadsword, and they go at it. They go at
it. Yes. If we're going to talk about the most fucked up versions of mixed martial arts, Team Ultimate Fighting.
Oh yeah.
See, this is literally in a huge sort of like five-a-side football pitch, and it's five-a-side Ultimate Fighting. And you literally, and you've got, there's about five referees as well, and basically what's amazing is when teams start to get outnumbered, and you literally have one guy on the ground with three guys around them kicking the shit
out of them. It's not like Ty.
No,
you're all in it at the same time.
You're all in it at the same time, and it's, I think it's more than five aside. They do it in Russia, surprisingly.
There was one I watched which was Russia versus Poland, and that was quite the grudge.
let's see if there's any sort of issues going on.
The worst bit of that was a German team came in from the side and beat the shit out of the Poles as well, and they divided them up.
Very good, very good. There we go. The other one as well, they do the single on the team fighting, but they do it on an assault course. So it's basically like gladiators, that travelator and all that sort
amazing
of stuff. But they get to, so when it gets down to like one person and three others on the other team,
yeah.
You just see this guy running and trying to hide, and finally they get cornered, and then it's,
wow,
like, it gets brutal.
Oh, I love that it's got the hide and seek element to
that's
it as well.
Yeah.
I'd be really good at the hiding bit of hide and seek UFC.
That's right.
Yeah. It's whichever round you start with, I think. If they started with the UFC, I'd be dead. If they started with the hide and seek round, I'd have a chance.
We're on.
Yeah, it's those guys with the massive muscles, they fail in that completely. So the first guy I discovered, and I'm sure, Brian, you're going to tell us all about this guy, is one of the most famously, iconically bad fighters, Kimbo Slice, who passed away this year.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, so he started out as an illegal street fighter. And he's an incredible looking guy. He's a black guy with bald head and a big fuck off Bin Laden beard.
Right.
And he was...
the 21st century version of the Hitler moustache.
Yeah. And he's nicknamed as the King of the Web Brawlers. My favourite fact about him is that as a web brawler, he was unbeaten apart from one fight where he lost to a guy called Sean Gannon, who was an off-duty Boston police officer.
Of course he was.
Yeah, and I can't remember if it's UFC or another franchise, but they were so impressed with Gannon, they signed him up as well. And his record reads, one fight, zero wins, one loss. He got his ass absolutely handed to him. But Kimbo Slice, he's got a similarly shitty record. Probably the two worst fights of his, he was meant to fight a guy called Ken Shamrock, who's a pretty well-feared fighter, and he was a professional wrestler as well.
And one of the first fighters in the UFC, so he was in UFC 2, he got to the finals. He was basically, he called himself the world's baddest man. When he came to the UFC, he walked into the cage, took off his cape, he was wearing, and revealed what was just the most ridiculously jacked body. He's an absolute legend. He's a ridiculously talented wrestler. Grew the ground game, got caught by Royce Gracie in UFC 2. This is one where they thought there's no way. Well, Royce Gracie blasted to everybody in UFC 1. No way in UFC 2 he's going to be able to match up to this guy. And yeah, I think it was within 2 minutes he was choking him out and getting his tap. So that's the power of jiu-jitsu. But that's it. He did fight him, in fact, in XFC, which was the most watched, I think had 6 million views. And that when you talk about draw and pulling power, Kimbo Slice grew like an entrepreneur, his business online, street fights, turning up at any place, any time, for money to fight you or your friends or anybody that wanted to do it. And you could follow it. Go on YouTube. It's unbelievable to watch. You see him in his car. They film him from the car. He's in the car. He gets out, takes his shirt off, walks straight into a fight. There's no glitz, no glamour. They walk into a backyard. They walk into a car park. They go to under the bridge.
Deliveroo, USA.
But he would turn up, and most people he absolutely mauled. They've got shots of his. And to say he's very poor mixed martial artist. But he did grow his game, and to be fair, he did train at ATT, American Top Team, for the last part of his career, which actually helped his ground game and helped him grow. But primarily a boxer, and from street fighting, when they showed his hands, he had a massively disformed right hand where his right knuckle had been so used to crashing people's skulls that it was like that. So, yes.
So I was reading about Bruce Lee, and he said when he realised he was hurting his hands through punching, that's when he sort of adapted his style of... He said the punching was ineffective or inefficient when you're fighting.
The gloves, the reason they're there is like this. The reason they're there are not to protect the people's faces that you think they're hitting, because that's the illusion. People think, it looks safe, they won't hurt. It's to save your hands. Actually, if you were to go back to bare knuckle fighting, and so with boxing as well, boxing has got huge safety issues because the glove is so protective. You can hit as hard as you can, and you train your techniques great, you train the muscles to be able to inject this huge amount of power over a bigger surface area. So actually there's an argument that we should go back to bare knuckle, because that would be safer for the person you're fighting. The only issue is it does cut you off a bit more, so that there would be potentially more blood. You wouldn't be able to hit people.
They're really boxing mittens.
Boxing mittens. Especially if they have the bit of string behind.
Yeah, but then the corner could just operate them like a marionette. So the fight with Shamrock that I was chatting about, he basically, Shamrock got injured, and Kimbo Slice refused to take on anyone else until his fee went up to $500,000. And he took on a guy called Seth Petruzzelli. Who was a pretty shit fighter as well.
Yeah.
And Petruzzelli knocked out Kimbo in 14 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
Good.
I've got my thing wrong then. The one that got 6.6 million viewers on the XFC card wasn't Ken Shamrock. It was a guy called James Thompson, who's actually a fighter from Bristol. The Colossus, it's called.
Oh, he's terrible.
He's not that bad. He's an absolute monster. I wouldn't want to check his supplements, let's put it that way. Kimbo Slice, there's a famous video that went viral, basically punched his ear off, so his ear exploded. It was a cauliflower ear, and the punches that Kimbo Slice had been hitting him with caused blood to fill up in the ear, which is exactly what cauliflower ear is. It's just bleeding in the ear, and Kimbo Slice hit him so hard, there's a point where his ear explodes, and in slow-mo, it's gory but glorious at the same time.
Oh man, that would feel kind of like a power up in a fight.
Because this is already a spectacle, like Kimbo versus James Thompson, this is already this huge spectacle. There was Kimbo Slice making a move to MMA, and there's so much hype. You can say as much as you want about his fighting style. As a draw, there's nobody who's pulled in more viewing figures. That 6.6 million was the highest at that point. I think the fight you're going to talk about next, which I'm guessing will be Dada 5000, was on Spike, and that is the most viewed and most embarrassing fight potentially ever put on TV. So whatever you say about his fighting style, something about Kevin Ferguson, Kimbo Slice, was magical and mystical for fans to watch.
He has an iconic look. Like,
he's a monster. He's the nicest guy. I did a podcast with Brad Pickett, who trained with him at American Top Team, and he's just the nicest, gentlest, total family man. Like, everything was about his kids, about his family. No scandals going on in and outside that. Obviously, the street fighting history he dragged himself out of the gutter through this this sport or whatever, how he promoted himself. Scariest looking man in the room. apparently, when you talk to him, he's just one of the most gentle, kind, nice human beings, which It's that whole thing of never did the book by its cover.
I want to talk about this terrible fight with Dana 5000, not least because it's not the one I'm going for, but Kimbo Slice is a big guy. Sometimes he looked like a decent athlete, sometimes he was maybe carrying a little bit of timber. But Dada 5000 was carrying an entire fucking redwood forest for most of the time.
Yeah.
And so the term I hear a lot is basically these guys gassed, so basically just ran out of energy really early.
Yeah.
And it was just these two big guys rolling around the cage, barely enough energy to punch each other. And in round three, Kimbo went for a punt, gently grazed Dada's chin, and he just went over.
Yeah.
And it looks like he's been paid several hundred thousand pounds to fall over. Instead, his heart and liver exploded.
He had the cardiac arrest, so this is a genuine thing that happened there. The history of those two is Dada 5000, we talk about the street fights, when Kimbo Slice was rising up through the Miami street fighting game, Dada 5000 was his bodyguard.
Right.
At that point, so they were together.
Oh my god, that's WWE backstory
shit. Yeah, it really is, mate. So Kimbo got massively famous off of this. Dada 5000 also took part in these street fights. So Dada 5000 had a lot of fights, but apparently he said because his fights were far more violent and ended far more dramatically, they didn't put those out on YouTube. So his beef with Kimbo is that Kimbo left him behind when he'd supported him all the way through. They never gave him the shine that Kimbo did when they put the stuff out. So there was this whole beef, but they come from the same area. These are two guys in the same area, and so they're street fighting. This is an old street fighting beef that was settled as the main event. It's the main event of a Bellator show, which is the second largest promotion in the country. above the co-main event was Hoist Gracie versus Ken Shamrock.
Oh, wow.
Who last fought in UFC 2.
Right.
So their combined age was 99. but they do have the credibility of being martial artists and MMA fighters, sorry. Dada 5000 didn't come in with the correct preparation. Fair play to him, he didn't just quit. He did get paid a lot of money for that fight, but he went as far as he could. But because he wasn't trained properly, he had a cardiac arrest at the end of it, which would have caused massive drama for the sport. If he had passed away, he went into a coma, they had to induce him into a coma, they brought him back round. Kimbo Slice then failed a drugs test.
Oh, Kimbo!
So he then failed a drugs test and was banned for, I think it was supposed to be a year, but then they booked him to fight in London last year outside of their commission. So then before that fight, he passed away with a heart attack as well. So it's not the nicest story, and it's one that could have caused so much damage to MMA just because of the light that was shined on that fight because of Kimbo Slice. Kimbo failing the drugs test. If Dada 5000 had died because of that, if you're taking drugs to make you better at beating the shit out of somebody, that could almost be murder, manslaughter, whatever you want to call it. So that could have set the sport back years. It's one of the most embarrassing MMA events. Not events, fights. The event was pretty good for that fight.
Just like watching it was like watching a Champions League final between like Ajax and AC Milan, but all they did was back passes for 9 minutes. It was terrible. And then just at the end, the entire Ajax team dropped dead. But I've got like two quick mentions and then the worst fighter I'm going to pick. There was a guy called Jeremy Bullock, who is a Taekwondo fighter. Now, Taekwondo, I'm very proud of the likes of Jay Jones winning gold medals in the Olympics, but as a practical martial art, it is bobbins. It really is. It's fucking dancing around, doing some sort of cheerleading high kicking. And he was going up against a guy called Travis Fulton. Now, if your name is, hello, I'm Jeremy Bullock, I'm an accountant. And if you're going up against anyone called Travis, you may as well tap out before the fight begins.
Yeah.
And basically, Travis comes into the ring, does a little bit of dance. So not Travis, Jeremy comes into the ring, does a little bit of dancing. At the start of the bell, he runs full pelt at Travis, high kick straight over his head. They do a little bit of grappling, and then Jeremy has Travis in a headlock on the ground. Travis picks him up with his entire body and then slams the body into the ground. And you just see Jeremy Bullock go, well, I wasn't expecting that to happen. I think we'll finish there. Thank you very much.
Taekwondo is not effective for MMA, I wouldn't have thought. Because their sport is, they get points scored for buttons and stuff inside their equipment,
yeah,
don't they?
It's still quite a brutal martial art if you're fighting somebody that's just fighting Taekwondo.
Yeah.
What the evolution of mixed martial arts is showing. That term has been born because people have realised that one martial art is a traditional martial art, it's not effective in a real situation.
Yeah.
So, brilliant parts of Taekwondo, the spinning back kick, the spinning heel kick, teeps, all that sort of stuff, controlling the distance, absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, Chun-Li was a pretty incredible fight.
She was beautiful.
Now there's a question. Which Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat character do you think would do best in MMA?
Sangief.
Big Russian dude.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I'd like anyone who could fight from a distance, so Scorpion.
Scorpion.
You can just use the dark from miles away, not have to go anywhere near them. Be outside the cage.
That's Mortal Kombat.
What was the Indian yogi called? Dal Singh.
Now he would be very good because you couldn't get anywhere near him.
Literally tie you in knots.
Who was the dude who got electric?
That was Blanka.
He was on the most annoying because if someone could just keep going.
I think we're going to drug test you, Blanka. Yeah. That's definitely not legal.
Drinking battery acid.
Yeah. there was one other stupid guy called David Gardner who fought in Japan and he was well out of his league. Managed to keep getting out of chokeholds until about 5 minutes in, he suddenly sort of realised he was on telly. And as the guy was going for a rear chokehold, he just went, "Hello, Japan!" And then the guy went, "Good night, David." But the worst guy from all of what I watched was a guy called Aliyev Mahmud, who was a Turkish wrestler.
Good, and we talked about this.
Not Turkish wrestling.
Turkish blood wrestling.
No, just a Turkish man who also wrestled.
That's the same.
And he was fighting against Kiyoshi Tamura in Japan. And he had the weirdest tactic, because even I've watched fights of guys who got knocked out in 10 seconds and they just run full pelt at someone and get sparked out, or they've just not got a ground game, or they've not got a striking game. His tactic was to bounce around the ring like a toddler who's had too much Sunny D. He sort of looks like, this is a weird reference, there's a scene in The Big Lebowski where Lebowski discovers he's being trailed by a little fat Italian detective, and this stubby little 5'2" man starts trying to wrestle him by putting his hands out like a little bear. So he's doing that, and the Japanese guy is just looking at him going, "What the fuck are you doing?" And there's a point where basically he jumps towards him just as the Japanese guy raises his knee and manages to get himself kneed in the bollocks. And so the fight stops. And then he kind of goes, "No, I'm not going to continue, I'm not going to continue." And then he realises he's surrounded by a crowd going, "Fucking man up, you idiot."
Yeah.
He goes, "All right, I will." So he goes into the fight again and then says, no, I don't want to fight anymore. Right. And then he goes, no, I am going to fight. It's like a cat deciding whether he's going to go out for the day. And eventually, after getting hit one more time, he just goes, "I don't like my career choices anymore." And I sympathise with him a lot, but there are so many brave and impressive fighters in MMA. It's the idiocy mixed with the cowardice, because at least there are other people. There's a guy called Stephen Salmon who's lost 12 times in a row.
Yeah.
But at least he engages.
At least
he's happy to have his face hit with knees.
Yeah.
This guy, I speak as a man who has managed to successfully kick himself in the bollocks.
Yes.
But that is a story for another time.
First of all, it's very difficult for me to, and it's a bit of a cliche, but when you're looking at martial arts, anybody who has the courage to do that, to step in and test themselves, because it's a huge thing you're putting on the line. You don't know the outcome, there's so many variables, it's a dangerous sport. Also people that have committed their life to a martial art or to something, their passion, and then they want to display it and compete or test their skills on a certain level. Very, very difficult for me to go, "You are the worst." It's almost, you are the world's worst mixed martial artist. But But I'm going to give you a name. His name is Kyle Fletcher. Now, okay. I'm also going to tell you this. You're not going to be too happy with this, lads. I don't know much about him.
It's all right.
I've only seen 3 minutes of his fight. But the reason I am picking him is not because of him. It's because of somebody that he has fought. Now, one of his... somebody he fought was a guy called Fred Ettish. Now, Fred Ettish fought...
Sorry, his initial is F. Ettish.
We're going to leave it there. We're not going to get any better than that. That's enough. So, Fetish.
Yeah, and why exactly are you in this ring? I don't know. I just really like it.
That's not a gi, that's a gimpan. So, Fred Ettish, this is the reason I'm picking Kyle Fletcher. So, Fred Ettish was in UFC 2. He'd watched UFC 1, and he was so... He's a traditional martial artist. He comes from Kenpo Karate, which is point-scoring karate system. He's a fifth-degree black belt. Now, if you know... You don't even have to know much about martial arts to understand that to get to a black belt, that means you're very good.
Yeah.
To get to a fifth degree in any discipline is an unbelievable achievement. Like, that puts you in the top 1% of 1% people doing that martial art on the planet. So this is like, he's so high level at Kenpo Karate. He'd seen UFC 1, he'd seen how other fighters tested, been a kickboxer on there, wrestlers, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, he'd seen how people had done that. He didn't really enjoy the point fighting system of Kenpo, and he truly believed in his fighting system. He very openly said, and this might have been part of his downfall, that this was the martial art would be more effective than any others out there. So he wanted to test his system, his skills against these people. So he phoned the UFC. You quite literally could. Their posters then, they had a phone number you could ring. You get straight through to the top brass of the UFC. So I went to that. Absolutely true.
I like the idea of Dana White being his own secretary. Yeah. So he has his own office, and then the phone outside, he goes and sits behind the desk outside, puts a wig on, goes, "Hello, this is UFC, this is Daniela speaking."
That was quite funny. But so he phones him and he said, "Look, I'm really interested, this is the level I'm at, I'd like to test myself." And they basically said, "Thanks for the interest, don't call us, we'll call you." Comes up, so UFC kicked off on 12th of November 1993, so that is the first one. On March the 11th, 1994, they decided to have UFC 2. Now, this one was getting much more exposure. Ken Shamrock was coming into it, Hoist Gracie was going to come in and try and defend his title, and he kept begging to be on the card. They said, "Well, look, what you can do, come down and watch the event. We will have you there as an alternate. So if there's any, it's a tournament thing." So basically, they have multiple fights on one night. It's a tournament thing. If there's any injuries or if there's any reason, it's very unlikely you have to fight. If there's any reason that you do need to, if there is an injury, you will get an opportunity to go in there and test your skills. So he sat back and he's watching it, and the first round goes through. He gets the call to go in. He gets 10 minutes to warm up, put his gi on, and go in there. Is it Johnson?
I love the fact that it's called a gi, because in Ireland, gi means family.
I got told that.
Conor McGregor loves a gi.
I was in Dublin this week, I was in a taxi, and I was on the phone, and I said to somebody, and I said, "I need a new gi," and the taxi driver laughed. He explained to me. So then all the way from the airport, which is about 20 minutes from the centre, we were doing, he said, "Do you have a tight gi?"
I've got one personally tailored.
"Is it easy to get in and out of your gi? Do you let other people wear your gi?" So there's various...
Dumb taxi drivers really know how to milk one joke.
But back to Fred Ettish. So Fred Ettish went in and he had this fight and he got destroyed in 3 minutes. Like, he came out in traditional Kenpo things, but he fought a guy who was also karate background. But he beat the shit out of him. He did really fight karate style. Fred Ettish came out all in that typical stance and got beaten up within 3 minutes, choked out with his back, really bloody finish to the fight. And off the back of that, Fred Ettish became like a cult thing. He became the joke of the UFC. And this is also the era where the internet just started.
Yeah.
So the first internet trolls were arriving.
Oh, Fred!
Listen to them. They created a site called the Fred Ettish Beta Fighting System.
Which is
Which is absolutely true.
The FFFS.
And that it was basically, still today, if you go on forums like Reddit and things like that, people will still make jokes about Fred Etish. He went in there for 3 minutes. He was then disowned by his the Kenpo fighting traditional people, that they said he didn't display the martial arts, and they're embarrassed by him. He was also then bombarded with internet trolls. But it's become like a running joke throughout the UFC. So this Fred Etish is almost like a punchline to the UFC. And for me, it's quite sad that he got judged on those 3 minutes. Like that, his whole life, his whole martial arts. And if you watch any of the UFC before that, the longest fight was 12 minutes long in the UFC. And they all finished quickly. Every single martial art found out they weren't the best. That there was going to be an issue. And for me, he was. This is the sad bit. So he lost the fight, got disowned by his martial arts background, the Kenpos.
Johnny Rhodes.
Johnny Rhodes, thank you, sir. Great MMA knowledge, mate.
It was in the back of my mind.
So Johnny Rhodes, and he was the one who had the longest fight previously. So he got this happened. He became a punchline. Like he was embarrassing all the combat sports websites and all that. Were taking the piss out of him. On top of that, just after the fight, he lost his son. Son passed away. He had huge issues in and around. His father, he comes from a background Minnesota, so he's like a blue-collar person. His father had committed suicide before that. So he comes from a really dark background. And 15 years later, he stepped back into the ring.
For his first fight in 15 years.
First fight against 15 years because of all these demons, because of all the stuff that happened, because of the way he's been ridiculed, he's been completely made fun of for putting himself on the line, for testing himself. Yeah, no one knew the 10-minute story until he told them when they did a documentary about him. Yeah. So 15 years later, at the age of 53, he stepped back into the cage to face Kyle Fletcher. The demons have been beaten in 3 minutes with the spotlight on him, with loads of MMA media there because we all knew who he was.
Yeah.
And he beat Kyle Fletcher in 3 minutes.
Yes, Fred.
And for me, it's just, with all respect to Kyle Fletcher, I don't know you, I don't know your background, your martial arts, I've only seen 3 minutes of your fight, but I just want to pass the mantle of the worst fighter to Kyle Fletcher.
It's like tag, you're it.
And release those demons. And for me, also looking back, martial arts means much more than just getting in there and being able to beat people up. I truly believe that from his background, I don't know him. I'm saying this just of knowing other people who've got through things through martial arts. From his background, from coming from a family with a father that killed themselves when he was young, if he hadn't found martial arts, if he hadn't dedicated himself to that, he probably would have gone down a different path. And also, because of martial arts, I'm sure that gave him something that helped him get through the passing of his son and also helped him deal with all this other stuff. So for me, martial arts is the winner, but for me, I just want to see Fred Etish no longer seen as MMA's world's worst fighter.
Nice. Charity case.
I can't wait to come back for part two of this podcast in 15 years' time to find out who Kyle Fletcher beat this shit out of.
My turn. I did a little bit of digging around. Now, first, I'm going to talk about something we talked about on another podcast, Muhammad Ali. So, in a previous podcast with Jim, Jim Smallman, we talked about the world's worst wrestler. And Muhammad Ali took part in a fight against a Japanese wrestler called Antonio Inoki in Tokyo in 1976, when Ali was WBC and WBA world champion, and Inoki was basically doing all these fights against people from different disciplines to show that his style of wrestling was the best combat side on the planet. And Ali wanted to, first he's going to be paid a shit ton of money to do it, which may be the main driving force in this. But also he was quite a proud, arrogant man, as you would be when you're the greatest. And so he said he called Inoki the Pelican because of his pronounced chin. And Inoki said, "Well, when your fist connects with my chin, take care that it is not damaged." quite polite smack talk.
Yeah. And Ali arrived, and at the press conference in Tokyo, he was shouting, "There will be no Pearl Harbor! There will be no Pearl Harbor!"
Oh, fucking hell!
If you look at Ali's smack all the way back, he's a massive racist.
Yeah, oh, yes. There was one of the guys, was it Joe Frazier? He was fucking horrible too.
Yeah, called him Mr. Tom. Which So that all the way through, and that really got on the joke, but he never let that go, and he never buried that beef. So, yeah Muhammad Ali smack talk. They never fought in Germany.
So the rules for the fight were, they sort of came up with a kind of a hybrid rules that they could use. To suit both their styles, Ali being a boxer and Logan being a wrestler. And there was, I think I mentioned this already, the undercard was Andre the Giant versus the boxer Chuck Wepner.
Oh, let's watch that one now. Let's come on now and you stop everything.
Andre just picked Wepner up and chucked him out of the ring. There was a crowd of 32,897 people in the audience watching it. And there's a story that the fight was meant to be fixed, that basically, they came up with a storyline that would give both of them a way of saving face. Ali would accidentally punch the referee and would knock the referee out, and Ali would be stood over the referee looking at him to see if he was all right, and then Inoki would basically kick him in the head
him
down. So Inoki would be able to say, "I knocked down Ali," and Ali would be able to say, "Well, I was looking at the referee, it was underhand."
I'm guessing the referee at this point was going, "I don't like this plan when Muhammad Ali gets to knock me out."
Yeah, Ali said, it may not be true, but apparently Ali said, "I don't want to lose." So they kind of renegotiate the rules. The referee said, no, there were going to be no restrictions on Inoki not being able to do such and such a move. And so, as I think we discussed in the previous podcast, Inoki just spent most of the time on the ground. And so Ali can't really get down to hit him. Ali didn't throw a punch until round 7. He only threw 6 punches in total. It's just basically Inoki kicking Ali's shins.
Wow.
For these 12 rounds, the audience are completely dissatisfied. Like, they're booing, they're jeering, the whole thing. Inoki gets 3 points for under the scoring system they come up with, and then loses 3 points for foul play. Meaning that Inoki can claim to have won, and Ali can claim to have been cheated, and it's a draw, and nobody has to leave with any slight on their records. But Ali does suffer an infection and blood clots in his legs because of all the cuts
that Inoki made, and you can see
in his ensuing fight his movement from 76 onwards just basically disimproves.
Wow.
Because of all of that. And so he was probably not made for MMA.
Wow,
Ali.
Yeah.
I would love it if we're going to call the greatest sportsman of our time the worst MMA fighter.
He's in the hat now.
Hey, he was good at what he could do, but he couldn't do that.
I mean, if we're going to go down that route, then we'll say, right, Joey Barton was the worst MMA fighter.
Apparently he's pretty good, Joey Barton.
I bet he'd be pretty handy.
That's right. He probably needs the old rules, though.
And a lit cigar.
Talking about someone else who was good in one discipline but terrible as an MMA fighter, Emmanuel Yarborough.
Yeah.
You ever seen him? So he was second at the 1992 World Sumo Championship. It's a massive 6'8". 600 pounds. He was the largest combat fighter in the world at the time.
Wow.
Like, huge guy, American dude. And he showed up at UFC 3, and he played his first, and I think his only fight was against a guy called Keith Hackney, who was a black belt karate fighter, 5'11", 200 pounds. Nearly a foot shorter, 3 times lighter than Yarborough. It's kind of hilarious looking in the ring. And the way it sets up is Hackney's already in the ring. He's got sort of a slightly early 90s perm thing going on. Blonde, pretty boy. And then Yarborough just lumbers in like a wardrobe on legs. This is in 1994, I think. And at the start of the fight, Yarborough basically is wailing with a couple of arms. He gets a decent knock in. And you think, this isn't going to last long. And then it just takes one decent sort of unbalancing maneuver from Hackney, and Yarborough is on the ground. And 36 fists to the head later, the referee stops the fight. I actually watched it three times to count exactly how many times Yarborough's just on the ground with Hackney smacking him on the side of the head with his forearm. It's 36 hits.
He's had another fight. He's had some more fights. So he basically he's also fought in Japan and in a, he's in the biggest weight. Yagra would be what? Sorry,
600 pounds.
600 pounds, and Hackney was in that
200.
200. He has fought somebody in a ring, not in a cage, in Japan, who was a lightweight, so 155 pounds.
Wow.
So
oh, I think I watched that fighter. One.
And I think it goes. So in Japan they have a 10-minute first, or the use of fight rules, a 10-minute first round. And the young Japanese fighter just runs round him.
Yeah.
And it's genuinely a point where Yagra's chasing him and chasing him. And literally ties him out on his feet and then finally trips him up, gets him to the floor, climbs on top, and then Yagra just can't get up. He's exhausted from chasing him around the ring that he cannot get up his back. So it's one of those, it's a complete freak show. You just stick it on, it's this.
Yeah.
Millions of views on YouTube.
Because UFC is kind of, it's not homogenized completely, but there is a kind of a more unified feel to the fights that you watch.
For it to be palatable and for it to work on, for it to be able to sell it to TVs, they had to bring in weight classes, they had to bring rules, regulations, unified rules. The only reason we've got breaks is for us to be able to slot Coca-Cola in the middle. So it's all to give the illusion that it's a safer thing. And actually the weight classes is certainly, we shouldn't be fighting this sport where you can have, I've gone back and watched some archives of some like not very well regulated MMA events where they've got huge difference in size and skill, and you're allowed headbutts and all that, and I just can't watch it. I like fighting, I like competition, but that's barbaric. So you need these weight classes. And for things like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, where they do the open weights, so you can have a small guy fight, it's a completely different thing. But when you're dealing with somebody dropping elbows on somebody's head, there needs to be a balance. It needs to be size against size.
It's kind of hilarious watching a sumo wrestler fight like karate.
It's the movie. It's the movie kickboxer. It's that whole Jean-Claude Van Damme is exactly that. They even were going to model the cage. They weren't going to use a cage. They were going to use a moat. And this is genuinely. This is genuinely true. This is absolutely.
What a big trebuchet at the
this is true. They wanted a moat, so there's a platform with a moat, and they looked into would they be allowed alligators. This is part of the thing. The cage.
So they'd be on a platform in the middle.
So they looked at three ways of doing it. The third way is a cage that just came at the end of the octagon, which is now famous, and that's what was done in and what is recognised as a symbol for UFC MMA.
Yeah.
But before that, they had talked about a pit.
Yeah.
Exact great words. A pit in the ground where the spectators would be above. But then they had issues filming it, so then they thought, well, we don't.
I thought that was the reason they didn't pick that.
That was it. They wanted it to look and feel like that. And then they went for to look into a moat, so it'd be either a raised platform with a moat that would force people to stay in there. And they genuinely looked at what the issue would be if they put alligators in there.
I don't know what the issue would be. The alligators.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
But the commentary by David Attenborough would be astonishing.
Planet Earth 2.
Yeah.
No, bro, he's being approached.
The dance as old as time.
I've got one other guy I want to mention before I give you my actual pick. This is a guy called Kenneth Allen. Have you heard of Kenneth Allen?
Well, anyone called Kenneth should be fighting. I'm saying that right now.
So I've discovered this from SureDog.com, which is sort of a database of people's performances. Kenneth Allen has a record of one win from 37 fights. And his last fight was in January 2015. So these fights, it was over about a 10-year period, from 2005 to 2015. His fight, his stats are 5'8", 170 pounds, he's a welterweight. And the reason Kenneth Allen has such a bad record is as he describes himself, a band-aid. Whenever someone, there's a card's been booked and someone drops out and they've got this big name in who they still want to have them fight someone, Kenneth Allen gets the call to go over the shore.
Ken Allen, that's what they should call him. Yeah.
He just shows up at these fights so that this guy has somebody to fight.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's of a decent enough standard and won't be terrible, but he's not anywhere near the level of the guys he's usually put in against. But he's not my pick. He's not my pick. I think Kenneth Allen is a better fighter than Corey Simpson. Because Corey Simpson is the one from Kenneth Allen's record.
Oh, oh yes.
Yes, Corey Simpson.
Corey Simpson, who has a record of 14 wins and 171 losses.
Christ, that's
one of his losses was to Kenneth Allen in Kenneth Allen's one victory.
Oh, man.
He beat Corey Simpson in 2006 in 54 seconds using the rear naked choke. Kenneth Allen also points out he's never been KO'd. He's had six technical knockouts, but never a knockout.
What a proud man. I love that.
Yeah, but he's kind of proud of his. Of the fact that he is a decent enough fighter that people go, yeah, we'll have you come and fight against whoever.
Because you'll have a fight this year.
Yeah, it won't be terrible. And look at the length of the fight.
They're not
short fights. He's not usually beaten in sort of like seconds. It's usually a few minutes. So he's decent enough. I thought Corey Simpson couldn't be bettered, given that he lost Kenneth Allen. And then I went to ancient Greece then. I liked it.
Yeah, okay.
And I read about the Pancratian.
Pancration.
Yeah, Pancration, which is it was an ancient Olympic sport. It was basically no holds barred wrestling. You couldn't hit a bind or gout, but basically you could do pretty much muscles.
And it had to open palm hand stretch.
Open palm hand stretch. And it's still done today. It wasn't included in the Olympics when they resurrected it, unfortunately.
Yeah, I watched a video of Pancration.
Pancration.
There's bits of it that look surprisingly like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
It's close to mixed martial arts you can get. In France at the minute, for some crazy reason, mixed martial arts cage fighting is still banned. So what they do instead, their athletes have to compete in pancration. It's pretty much close. It's still a mix of martial arts. So you're doing Greco-Roman wrestling. Mm-hmm. You've got a hand strike, so you've got boxing, karate, I suppose, styles in there, as well as submission games as well. It's cool. It's like MMA light.
Yeah, but back in the day, it was just one way. Mostly one with submissions and some main or some dance. They didn't have weight classes. They didn't have weight classes. They had men and boys. And you know, ancient Greece, anything goes. The judges, like we were saying earlier, the judges just they should keep people fighting. They would have switches and rods to sort of keep coaxing you into fighting each other. You see, there's like images in Grecian urns and vases with people, old guys with beards with sticks watching fights, and that's what they're doing.
Or just go, get back in the fucking ring.
Fight. Yeah.
Jesus.
And it was in the Olympics from 648 BC onwards, throughout all the old ancient Olympic Games. And my favourite story and my pick for the worst mixed martial artists comes from this fight was a guy called Arichion. He was the Olympic champion in 572, in 568, and in 564 BC. So three consecutive Olympics, he was the man in Pancration.
By beating a collection of 10-year-old boys today.
it's not clear who his opponent was in his final victory in 564 BC, but I'm going to read you the account of the fight from a guy called Pausanias. There's two accounts, one by Pausanias and one by Philostratus the Younger. And Pausanias writes, "The last remaining competitor got a grip first and held Arichion, hugging him with his legs, and at the same time squeezed his neck with his hands. Arichion dislocated his opponent's toe, but expired due to suffocating. But he who suffocated Arichion was forced to give in at the same time because of the pain in his toe. The elders crowned and proclaimed the corpse of Arichion."
Oh my God.
So, a guy lost an Olympic final to a dead man.
To a dead
and
man.
That guy
that
is the worst.
Worst mixed martial artist.
I'm all sorry, time. Fred, I tried, mate.
Philostratus' account says Arichion actually wrenched his opponent's ankle from the socket. And his trainer was apparently shouting, Arichion's trainer was shouting, "Never defeat an Olympian, never defeat an Olympian." So, our candidates for the world's worst MMA fighter are Ben's choice of Afiyev and Mahmoud, is that right?
Yeah, that'll do.
That's a good close approximation. Brian's choice of Kyle Fletcher, the vanquished fighter against Fred Ettish, and mine, the unnamed opponent of Arichion, the Pancrationist.
Is Pancrationist the official word?
I feel like it is, yeah, definitely. Afiyev Mahmoud, I don't think his story is as gripping as the other two.
No.
He doesn't match entirely. I'm tempted to pick my own choice,
But Brian's passionate plea for the redemption of Fred Ettert, I feel like the Hollywood ending would be for him to be redeemed by a podcast who will never listen.
I'll send it to him. I'll send him the podcast.
I kind of like the idea that this is going to be the final sort of full stop in his redemption, his comeback story.
I don't make this too emotional, but I'm well enough here.
And that in 15 years' time, we'll be doing a podcast about Kyle Fletcher beating some poor child. Some poor ancient Greek child. So I think I'm going to pick Kyle Fletcher as the world's worst MMA fighter, just because it seems like the right thing to do.
Oh, yours is better. We will say that.
Yeah.
There's a man alive on this planet that may have 1 ounce more dignity.
Yes, I feel like we're doing the right thing.
We are doing the right thing. But it does feel like when Kyle Fletcher does do that fight in 15 years' time, it will be against a corpse at the start of the fight.
And he'll lose.
He will lose, yes. The corpse will fall on him and that's it.
So, before we wrap up, I've got a bit of the world's worst news of the week, and this is courtesy of Reuters. Chinese websites have blocked searches for the term Fatty Kim the Third. Fatty Kim the Third is a very popular term that a lot of Chinese, particularly younger, more irreverent Chinese people, use for Kim Jong-un. Because he's third in the line of fat Kims who've ruled North Korea. The foreign ministry, Chinese foreign ministry, apparently disapproves of mocking foreign leaders. So in a press conference, a spokesman for the foreign ministry said, we've definitely not been blocking those search terms. That does not accord with the facts. But in the same press conference says, we do disapprove of people mocking foreign leaders. Basically saying, oh yeah, we probably did tell Weibo not to let that search term come up with any results, but we're not admitting to it. The last time it was blocked was in September, when North Korea was testing nuclear weapons. So they went, oh, let's just make sure they don't test them anywhere near us. It's just not insulting for the month of September. So people can't search for the term Jin San Pang, which is the Chinese version of Fatty Kim the Third. But the search term Kim Fat 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 remains searchable. So bad news for Kim Jong-un's everywhere. Before we wrap up, Brian.
I look, we're not going to see that fight in 15 years because Kim Fat 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 would be so pissed off.
Yeah.
We'll be the first country to go.
I would love to know what Kim Fat Fat Fat's MMA record is. You know how his dad has played 18 holes of golf and got 18 hole in ones? He's just kind of like, yeah, I managed to submit the entire Gracie family at the same time.
I beat Arifian at the 64 Olympics. Before we go, Brian, where can people find more about you and your projects and all that?
Yeah, cool. So check out, I've got a podcast. It's MMA podcast with Brad Pickett, One Punch Pickett. He's a UFC fighter. Me and him once a week talk about fights, all sorts of other rubbish as well. So that's the One Punch podcast on iTunes. You've got Facebook up there as well, all the other bits. You can get me at Brian Lacey. That's Brian with a Y. At Brian Lacey on one Twitter handle and at Brian Lacey MMA on another. So you can follow me there and find out where in the world that I will finally be dead and buried in Russia.
Excellent. That's it for us for another week of Worst Foot Forward. We're off to go find the corpses of some Greek children. Thank you for listening and we'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye. So that was the excellent Brian Lacey.
Yeah, Brian was great. I've a little bit of me feels like I should have picked the dead guy. The guy who lost to the dead guy.
Yeah, no, the guy who lost to the dead guy. The dead guy is living it up in the pantheon, like up there on Mount Olympus, covered in garlands and olive oil and nymphets. And the guy who lost to him is just there slopping away with a mop.
But thankfully, 2,500 years later, we've given him a shout out on a podcast.
Yeah, that's exactly the sort of immortality he'll be after. If you enjoyed Brian, and want to hear him in his element, here are a couple of places you can do so. He is a podcaster for the ACB League, which I believe mostly involves highly trained men and women beating the shit out of each other professionally.
That's what this is like without the microphone turned on.
Yeah. And he also has the excellent podcast, the One Punch Podcast, for all of your MMA needs.
Yes. Please, of course, do the usual thing with us. Rate us, comment us, subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher and SoundCloud and wherever the other places are that we're apparently on.
Yeah, and now, I don't want to sound like I'm banning the desperation drum. We obviously say this every week because it's the thing you have to do in order to pop up the iTunes charts, but it really does make a difference. It's not about how many downloads we get, although obviously we love loads. It's all about the interaction with the podcast. So if you've listened to loads of them, you think this is the business, pop on the platform of your choice, leave us a review, leave us a rating. It is immeasurably helpful to us.
The other thing we'd love you to do is, of course, follow us on Twitter at WorstFoot, follow Ben at Ben Vandeveld, follow me at BazMaxDay, and send us an email, worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com. I don't know why I went like this. I'm now turning into the guy from The X Factor.
Yeah.
Rachel Adedeji. Is not our guest.
It's not our guest next week, no. Who is our guest next week, pal?
Our guest next week is the lovely Ivo Graham. Ivo is another wonderful stand-up, baby-faced killer of the stand-up circuit. He does not kill baby faces. But he will be joining us to talk about a kiddie subject. We're going to talk about the world's worst kids movies.
There's a lot of Robin Williams.
There's a lot of Robin Williams. And also, Ivo's a little bit younger than both of us, so there's a slight generational gap between the two of them.
Yeah, that's true. Things that we sort of think are classics, he is unaware of.
Yeah. So if you were a child of the 90s, or a child ever, please tune in next week.
Please do. One last thing. If you're the kind of person who either lives in Brighton or frequents the Brighton Fringe, I'm doing a couple of shows there on May the 26th and May the 27th. I'm doing previews of my new show, Sidekick, at the Quadrant Pub at 7:15 each day. It'd be bloody lovely to see you there.
Oh, and by the way, it's my birthday this week. Oh. Happy birthday, me.
Happy birthday, Barrett. It was my birthday 2 weeks ago and no one said a fucking thing. But then this is the world's worst podcast and that was the world's worst birthday.
Very much. Ben keeps his festivals on brand.
Yeah. I'm off to eat some stale cake and cry.
I haven't given him any of my fresh cake.